Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, our weekly programme looking at what's going on in the world of technology from a blind and partially sighted perspective. If you want to get in contact with us, you're more than welcome to drop us an email or a voice message to techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That's T-E-C-H-T-A-L-K at rnib.org.uk. Coming up this week, we're hearing all about the Tactonom, an innovative braille learning device. We'll be celebrating some of the ways that blind and partially sighted people have impacted accessibility in their everyday lives. And we'll be digging into some of the new accessibility announcements from Apple as part of Global Accessibility Awareness Day. Hubert Pavalkovic and Natalie Curran are with me this week. Let's see what's grabbing your attention. I mean, there's been a lot going on with Global Accessibility Awareness Day. We'll dig into the Apple stuff later. But Hubert, anything else caught your eye this week?
It's nothing massive for us yet. By us, I mean us folks in the UK, because I've seen the latest update to the Meta glasses, which I installed, even though I can't really take advantages of some of the new features available, because they are, guess what, US and Canada only at the moment.
Come on.
But one of the things I thought was quite nice is you will be able to, at some point in the UK, check your emails on your Meta glasses and manage your emails, which I quite like the sound of.
I like the sound of it, but do you remember when they tried to do this on Lady A a few years ago? You could tie it into Gmail. That was never a good experience. But to be fair, we have come a long way since then, a hell of a long way. So that could be interesting to like revisit that.
I'd like to see how effective it will be and how easy it'll be to manage emails, because the one thing that the Meta glasses have at the moment is any WhatsApp message or any message of any kind that's too long for it to read, it won't read. Emails are often obviously longer, so I'd be quite curious if you kind of get half an email going, well, read the rest from your phone now.
Yeah.
Maybe. To be fair, my first thought was privacy, I'm going to be honest, because I know like email has had a question mark over it for years anyway, and then I think just linking up to Meta glasses, I do worry. Now, I should caveat this is a totally baseless thing. Like, I've not heard anything bad. I've not heard anything to worry me as such. I'm just, that was the thing that pinged in my head of,
Yeah, you've got a point. I mean, there's a lot of these tying into emails. I'm hearing a lot of talk about OpenClaw, this AI service, which I'm not going to get into too much because it's very geeky at this stage. A really basic explanation is it's this AI agent that you install on your computer and you give it access to literally everything. It gets access to your entire system and it can just go off and do things for you. So you could say that whenever an email comes in, move it to this folder. But you could go further than that and say, you know, go to this website, or not even go to this website, just say, I want to do this and I want it to book this flight and this hotel and buy this thing to go with it on my holiday, and it will literally just go off onto the website as you log in and do it for you. And before you get too excited, as I said, it's a very geeky project at the minute, but we're seeing a lot of this, like AI just being tied into everything. I mean, just to bring it back to emails, I'm hearing some people say, oh, this is, you know, I'm just emails that are quite simple to reply to, I'm just letting it reply. And I'm like, absolutely not. No. Don't go sending off emails.
I don't mind AI getting to do things, but I'd like an overview first as to what it wants to do before it does it. Because the problem is, if you let AI just do things on its own, you're just asking for trouble. To me, I want to know. I'm happy for AI to do things, but just say, I'm going to do this. Is that okay? Because then I can look at it and go, actually, no, don't send that. That might get me in trouble. So it's that sort of thing. I mean, I like using AI to search my emails, for example. I'm a trustee for a sight loss charity in my local area, and I wanted to know the dates of board meetings. I typed into Gemini, can you search my emails for the board meetings from this person? And it pulled it up just like that without me having to go through my entire inbox trying to find this. So there are uses of tying AI into things, but the good thing is I use it and I know what I'm doing with it and what I'm asking. I wouldn't want AI to do too much for me without me kind of having, you know, control over it and being able to intervene.
I have to say, I don't know if I mentioned it on one of these shows before, so stop me if this is repetitive, but it was a few months ago, I received an email from a colleague. Now, this colleague had sent me a document to review and I'd sent back some feedback or some bits that I wanted to add in. So the colleague's email read like, thanks so much for your feedback. It was good for these points because you mentioned this, which means this, and you mentioned that, which means that, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, kind regards. And I thought, this screams of Copilot. This is exactly what Copilot do. So I replied to it as normal me. I didn't use Copilot. But at the end of the email, I said, I hope you and Copilot like this or agree with me. And then the colleague replied in exactly the same format. And at the end, it said, yes, me and Copilot are very happy.
Oh.
And just a caveat, I don't think this colleague has the type of sense of humour where if he had realised what I'd said, he would have said that. So I enjoyed that very much. So be careful. To Hubert's point, be careful. Check before you send anything.
Yeah. I mean, you have got a point, though, about the privacy. Because, like I said, I'm seeing more of this, like AI just having the access and the control into more and more of our lives. And I was always a bit sort of, I mean, I do care about privacy. I work in, my day job is partly in cybersecurity. So, I mean, of course, I'm conscious about it. But you do have to kind of get, like, just channel it a little bit. Because, again, all these agents and stuff, I'm thinking, yeah, that sounds brilliant. And then my next thought is, oh, hang on a minute. What does it need access to for that? My password manager, my credit card, my browser. Maybe not. This doesn't feel like a good idea, actually.
I think it's all about if it asks to access something and it doesn't explain why and what it will do with it, then just don't do it. Because at the end of the day, I'm only going to give it access to something as long as I know, A, why it needs it, and B, what it's going to be used for. Because otherwise, you're just signing, you don't know what you're signing. You don't know what you could be agreeing to. So, you know, there's a lot of apps that can go, we need permission to ask access the microphone to, so you can make phone calls and record voice memos for example. It tells you why it needs access to something. That's fantastic. If it doesn't, and you don't know what it needs access to, or it doesn't give you a link where you can read it, then simply, if you're not sure, just don't agree.
Definitely.
The one that I always say no to every single time without fail, so far, because I've never had a good enough reason to justify it. Do you know the one in iOS lately where it comes up? Allow this app to track your activity across other apps and websites.
Yeah.
Oh, no, always say no to go that. Away. No, thank you.
Always say no to that one as well. Not a chance. You don't need to know what I'm doing anywhere else.
Natalie, have you spotted anything this week?
Yeah, mine's quite small in the scheme of things because I know we're going to have a bigger chat later. But I was at a Global Accessibility Awareness Day this week, and I don't know if anybody here has heard of this, but unfortunately he's now got a reputation as Spaceman, or he did for the day. I think that tag might stick whether he wants it or not. But it's an Estonian gentleman who's been blind from birth called Jakob. He was following the Artemis moon space shuttle thing. Sorry, I am not a space geek. And he was trying to follow it on the NASA website, and NASA has created these lovely graphs. And he thought, that's wonderful, but that tells me absolutely nothing. So he decided to create his own thing. And to be fair, he did use an AI agent to help significantly with this. I think he just said to it, I'm blind, I want to be able to track Artemis to create a dashboard for me to do that with. And it did, and he's iterated on it. And what he found was, he shared it with just a few friends because it was just a wee, I suppose, guinea pig project. It wasn't meant to be anything big. I think he was bored in a meeting. But he sent it to a few friends, and then next thing he knew, it was all across the internet, and sighted people were getting in touch saying, this is brilliant. Though some developers did say, it's brilliantly functional, but it is a bit ugly. And he said, well, I don't care about that. So he's having to sort of retrofit. He started with the accessible version, and it's having to go backwards to make it a pretty accessible version. But yeah, and I thought I'd mention it in case there is anybody out there who's, even if you're not super interested in space, you might be interested in just what he's done. And I think it's called Audio Radar. I mean, I'm sure if you Google something like space tracker for blind people, it would probably come up. But I think that's what it was called, just Audio Radar. And yeah, have a wee look. I thought it sounded very, very cool.
I love the fact that he did the accessibility as the main focus and then had to do the visuals afterwards. It's a nice switch around, isn't
Yeah, because he's
it?
blind, so he didn't care how he looked, how it
Yeah.
looked, and also, he wasn't intending to publish it or share it. Like I said, it was just a wee hobby, a wee pet project for him. So yeah, I thought that was great.
It is cool. I like that we've got to this point now where, in some ways, we're able to like solve our own problems. Stuff like this.
Yeah.
Well, obviously we're going to talk a little bit about Apple later, but the Android users, I've not left you behind, don't worry. There's some news that caught my eye this week. We have had the Google events, which I'm sure we'll get into at some point, but something that I really like is from Samsung. They've announced that they are unifying the TalkBack experience. So on Samsung devices, they've had a kind of separate version of TalkBack to Google's devices or basically any other devices that are running Android. I assume the reason they've done this is because they're thinking, well, we've got our own flavor of Android. So therefore, if we do our own TalkBack version, we can make sure that it's fully accessible with all our Samsung things, which makes sense. But what it's meant is that features that have come to Google's TalkBack, especially lately, so things like the advanced image descriptions with Gemini and being able to ask follow-up questions and things like that. And sometimes it's been like new gestures as well. It's been months since until they've made it into the Samsung version of TalkBack. So it's meant that Samsung users have often been really behind with these features. But from what as I understand it, they're now just essentially going back to the standard TalkBack. So whenever they're going to the Play Store version, basically. So whenever there's an update from Google, as far as I understand it, you'll get it on your Samsung devices straight away, or pretty much straight away.
I think that's really important because that was always my issue with Samsung devices where people would not be able to access certain features straight away because it wasn't unified. So when I saw that, I thought that's going to make it a lot easier because when I used to do training on Android devices for blind and partially sighted people, I used to always struggle with that where you'd use one Android device and you'd have one experience from one company and you use another and you have something completely different. And I think unifying that experience more is really important because that way people know what they're getting their hands on more better, regardless of what device they are using. So I think that's a huge step for Android users, definitely. I think that's really important.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've got a Samsung. I've had a couple of Samsung phones now that I use for work, and I can use Android, but it's not my daily device. So I'm just not as comfortable with it as I am on iOS. And that's not because Android is bad, it's just what I'm used to. But the TalkBack thing didn't help because I would see all these features like the image descriptions built in, and I would think, okay, brilliant. That will help me out a lot, actually. And of course, I get my Samsung phone out and it's not there. And I know there are ways to put the Google TalkBack onto Samsung. There are ways to do that. But first off, it's quite techy, which doesn't particularly put me off. But my problem was because I've got work data on there, which is in a separate profile and kind of locked down, they don't allow me to do that because you've got to get into the weeds a bit of Android to do it. And as soon as I put my work profile on there, it locks it down for security reasons. So that wasn't an option. I'm looking forward to this. I don't know if my device is going to get the update for it. I'm going to need to check that, but I will be playing around with that definitely if I can get it, because I do feel like there's a lot that Samsung users have been missing out on, to be completely honest. So some good news there if you're a Samsung user. Well, a lot for us to get into this week. It's been Global Accessibility Awareness Day, which is of course always an interesting time. Stick with us. It's another Tech Talk.
You are listening to RNIB Connect Radio and our Making It Accessible series to celebrate Global Accessibility Awareness Day, where we talk to members of the blind and partially sighted community about something they've helped to make accessible. Today, we are hearing from Ian McNamara, who's taken part in a few projects. Ian, thank you for joining us.
No problem.
So the first project I want to cover with you is when you helped with the My Health app. Before we kind of get on to your work you've done on that, can you tell us a little bit about what the app is and how you came to test this?
It's by the Clinical Commissioning Group. When I tested it, which was a few years ago, it was only covering South Birmingham. It's basically an app similar to like what you would have with your GP surgery. It allows you to book appointments. It allows you to see your patient records, all the usual stuff that your GP surgery app would allow. And I got involved in it because I used to be part of the Birmingham Sight Loss Council, and we were asked to work with them, the developers of it, to give feedback and check its accessibility for blind and visually impaired people. It was the first project I took part in for them, and it was also what led me into the job I do, which is testing websites and apps for accessibility for blind and partially sighted people. I did actually two things. Not only did I work with a developer to test the app and took part in live demo sessions, I also did, me and a colleague, we also did the podcast. One of us did the desktop and one of us did mobile, and we actually did a tutorial of how to use the basic aspects of the app, such as registering, etc.
So going into the actual, you know, demo sessions when you first sat down with the app, you know, what were your primary concerns or expectations regarding the accessibility of the app?
I didn't expect it to be as good as it was, and I was actually pleasantly surprised when I did the first session with the developer. He was very open to feedback. He made it clear that he actually wanted to know what the problems were. Like, he didn't want us to sugarcoat anything. He wanted to know exactly what our experience was. I was really pleasantly surprised when I started using the app, how intuitive it was. They were really clear that they wanted to know exactly what it could and couldn't do in regards to like how it worked, what I was reading. And the good thing about, because it was a live demo session where he was actually there, he was obviously hearing what I was hearing, and I was able to tell him why each thing was a problem. It was actually easier than just doing a demo and pre-recording it. It was actually nice to actually be there with him and actually be able to show him in the same room what the problem was, to help him understand how we navigate using screen readers.
For those who maybe haven't used the My Healthcare app, what does good navigation look like in a health context? And why is it so vital for this, you know, specific type of app?
Good navigation is important because for a screen reader user, obviously, we're not able to access any information. You know, we can't, like a sighted person, they can look at the app, they can look at the information and quickly skim down it and pick out what they want. As screen reader users, that's not as easy for us to do. So it's important that it's very, very clear and easy to read. It's important that the information is understandable. So for example, say it says number of appointments booked this week, 25. It needs to say exactly that. Like, and if it says, for example, number of appointments, if it has all the columns first and then reads all the information, that's no use, because it means the person has to do more work memorizing what each of the columns are. Whereas if it says, for example, number of available appointments, 25. Also, it's important for this kind of app that the medical terms are explained somewhere, whether that's as part of the record or whether there's a separate information pack explaining the terms. Because obviously for someone who isn't medically trained, they might not understand what the terms are. It's important that also when you're navigating the app, it's important that the navigation is simple. So making sure everything's labeled as it should be. And another important thing on regards to that is if you've got to select dates, again, it's important that it's clear what appointments are available, and it needs to be selectable elements. So for example, something like select the 1st of January 2025, and if it's available, then obviously have the button showing, and if it's not available, then make sure it says not available. The most important thing is, like the My Health app did, get user feedback as you're testing it. So get blind and visually impaired users involved from the start. And then that way, obviously, when you're coming to release it, you've hopefully got a lot of the problems sorted before you release your first release. So you've then hopefully got a good start, and then gradually you can build on that. Whereas if you bring an app out and it doesn't work to the required specifications for a blind person, and then you want to add it in later, you're obviously creating more work for yourself.
Looking at the final version of the My Healthcare app, and by final version, I mean, you know, the version you last saw of the app when you used it, how much of the fingerprints of your accessibility feedback were reflected in the finished product?
The last version I saw, it was clear they had listened. They'd corrected the links that I'd said were not correctly appearing. They'd made it easier to book an appointment, like the dates were in a bit more of a easier way to understand. So rather than having a date picker with a calendar, they just had buttons with the dates, and you could go from previous to next month. It only showed you the ones that were available. So if the date wasn't available, it would say unavailable. From the first time we sat with them, my personal experience, I found the developer really interested. He wanted to know genuinely, like, he didn't want me to be polite and say something was good if it wasn't. He actually genuinely wanted to know what was wrong with it. I just remember being really pleased that our views were being taken into account, and this wasn't just a tick box exercise.
Absolutely. And it definitely is great. Sounds like you've done a lot of great work on that one. So thank you very much, Ian McNamara, for telling us about your work on making the My Healthcare app accessible here on RNIB Connect Radio.
No problem.
Yeah, so my name is Klaus. I'm Klaus Harris. I'm one of the two co-founders of Inventivio.
That's a great name, Klaus. I like that.
Thank you very much. We're proud of that too. Obviously, it comes from to invent, and that's basically what we're trying to do. I created this company with my brother, and one of the reasons is we have two blind people in the family. So
okay.
It's a business, but it's, you know, a bit more important than that for us. And due to the fact that you know, we have been involved in, you know, and had contact to people with blindness, we came to realize that accessing information for people with blindness is difficult, right? And that's where we started out and said, man, there's got to be a solution. We got to find ways to make it easier for people with blindness to, you know, access information in education, on the job, in participation, in leisure, and so on.
Yeah.
And that's where we started, with big ideas and just in the beginning without, you know, thinking about creating a business. And then we got sucked into this and got, you know, the first prototypes ready and realized, well, we're onto something which is really interesting. And what our approach always was to analyze what the issues are and then try to solve those issues, right? And the first product that we've launched is the Tactodon Reader Flex, which is an assistive learning technology. And here we ask ourselves the question, what do you need as a blind person in school to have this access to the same learning materials and learning formats as everybody else. And one of the big issues is, if you're blind, it's difficult to access graphical learning materials of all kinds, be it in math, biology, or what have you, right? And if you take a look at that, then you realize that sighted kids from the first day in school until graduation learn with something like 25,000 graphics. 25,000. You cannot open any school books without you looking at a graphic. And for a blind person, it's, well, what do? Well, you hope that someone would explain the graphic to you. Often that's not the case. And the description of graphical learning materials in most school books is not translated to Braille or not digitized so that you just cannot access it. And then, you know, what do you do? What do you do in maths, which is visual and spatial by nature and therefore difficult to access for a blind person? And that's where we started out and said, well, there has to be a solution, especially in education, which for us is the beginning of everything. What do we do? What can be a solution to enable blind people to access the same information and the same learning formats as everybody else? And that's where we came up with the Tacton Reader Flex. And our aim was to enable independent access to information. Not having someone sitting next to you and guide your finger and say, this is this, this is that. That is, you know, you're always sitting next to someone who knows better. That's not ideal learning conditions. You need to have someone who helps you. And then you quickly feel, you know, that's what I remember when I'm a sighted person. But when I was back in school, I remember when my brother helped me in maths, I hated it because, you know, I always felt stupid. And that's learning means you have to be independent in your speed and your approach and how to learn. If there's someone always sitting next to you, that is far more difficult. So that's the first thing. You need to be able to access information independently and learn about it independently without being dependent on someone else. How do we solve this? We have a camera that detects the position of your finger, and then it realizes where your finger is and reads out embedded information so that you can access any information by yourself. And that means you can do that on your own at your own speed. You don't need anyone else. You can take your time. And that is completely different learning. We can also help you find things and so on. So that's independent learning. The second thing is if you're a sighted person, then you'll have access to a lot of fun learning formats like multiple choice, gap texts, math, snake puzzles, pyramids, walls, triangles, what have you. They don't exist in the blind world. They just don't, because that's really hard to do. But if we're serious about inclusive learning, this means I have to be able to access the same learning materials and the same learning formats. And learning format is these playful learning formats that are not accessible. So that's the second step, was we enable that with the Tacton Reader Flex. And then the third thing was we realized, if you're blind, then obviously tactile information is super important for you. And today we have the great opportunity to work with 3D materials, be it in biology or in math and chemistry and physics, in the arts, you know. But if you feel a complex 3D model with your hands, it'll still tell you nothing. So that's where I said, well, we can come in here and help you because we realize where your finger is. Since the camera recognizes the position of your finger, you can place it onto the model itself, and then it explains to you what you have under your fingertips. Thereby, suddenly, learning with 3D models becomes possible, and what we're really doing is we're taking learning from the second dimension into the third, which is super helpful for blind people, right? That's only possible because we have computer vision and are able to see where your finger is placed on a 3D model and thereby make it easier to understand. And from there we said, well, wouldn't it be good to have intelligent apps that help you in maths, in writing, in measuring. And that's where we created what we call our magic range. And the magic wrench is first, it's a ruler, protractor, and a compass, which helps you to automatically measure distances, angles, and diameters. And how this works is the camera scans a QR code on the slide on the ruler at a zero position and a second on the slider, and just automatically tells me the precise distance between the two. Because today, obviously, a blind person can use a ruler, but if you want to be precise to the millimeter, that's difficult, right?
How did you put it all together to get to come up with Tacton and Flex? I've seen one and I was absolutely blown away by it. I really can see exactly the kind of the information, listening to it, feeling it, and my fingers going over and touching the points that would start the audio. So how did you put all that together? Because it really is a very sophisticated piece of equipment.
Yeah, it's been a journey.
I bet.
It's, you know, first we said, obviously, the fact that you combine two sensors, the tactile and the hearing sense, is extremely powerful.
Yes.
You touch something and I explain to you what you have under your fingertips while you're touching it. That's powerful. Right? That's where we started out. And then we got on and continued and realized we need more of this, more of that. And that's, you know, that's how we created this. And part is not for us, it's not a device. For us, it's a learning system or platform that integrates so many different things. You know, thousands of specially designed learning graphics for blind people that come from a nonprofit organization we work very closely with called ProBlind, that seamlessly works with our system. Then, you know, the system itself with all the software that is behind it. And then obviously all that we build around it with the magic math tools and braille letters and braille numbers and so on. So that's been a journey, but you know, now it's there. It's used across the world by blind people, and they're very, you know, excited and super motivated by the fact that it really helps blind learners to have a better education.
And even apart from the education value, which is enormous, it's huge, but for anybody, I mean, I just really enjoyed, there was one particular diagram that was on the Flex when I saw it recently, of the different parts of an orchestra, and it was just amazing how that came across to me, to feel the different tactile surfaces of the diagram, and to get that audio information about each, you know, each instrument or each part of the orchestra. It was just such a really, really good way of being able to understand. And you know, I really did enjoy playing around with it. I thought it was incredible.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. Yes, and it opens, you know, it opens access to all kinds of different information that is not easily accessible.
Yeah.
And what we've thought is super important is it also needs to be fun to do.
Yes.
Using your hands in itself, yes, it becomes fun, but it's not per se, and at the beginning, it's not something that you call fun, right? And that's why we integrate the sounds and things that are far more important for people with blindness than for sighted people, and do games with it and all kinds of different motivational learning materials, so that especially born blind and young kids will start to use their tactile sense, which then has an impact on how they learn.
That's absolutely brilliant. Klaus, thank you so much for joining us today on Tech Talk. This has been Klaus Peter Haas from Inventivio, and you're the general manager, and congratulations on such a fantastic product. I look forward to hearing more about it in the future. I work with young people in schools, and you know, I can, it's totally obvious why something like that would be, you know, so beneficial to so many kids in schools these days. It's brilliant. So thank you very much.
You're welcome.
So at this sort of time of year, us in the disability community get a little bit of a preview beforehand of what's coming from Apple. We've of course got WWDC in a couple of weeks, but we've had some accessibility announcements before that, and I think there's some interesting stuff in there. Hubert, I know you had a couple of highlights for this.
So for me, I mean, one of the main ones, and this is actually to the feature that I probably don't use as much as I should, and I should use it a bit more, it's the live recognition features, and using kind of the live recognition mode, which has been in iOS for quite a while. And I've not really used it, I'm not going to lie to you, not because I didn't want to, it's just because I just forgot about it. But two things about it now, where you will be able to invoke it using the action button if you choose to do so, which I think is really good, because that way you can quickly call on it. But the other thing is, you can also use AI. So we give you visual descriptions using AI, but you can also query it too. You can ask questions. So sort of similar to using a kind of live AI mode with Gemini or ChatGPT, where you get to point your camera at something and ask questions about what it sees. You will now be able to do that with the live recognition, which I actually think might make me want to explore that feature a bit more than I have done up to this point.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm the same as you. The funny thing is, the things that I use Seeing AI for, like the short text feature, for example, and the document features, they're all in live recognition. They're all there and they work pretty well. I think they work pretty identical, really, especially the short text. Like, they're both pretty good in terms of accuracy. But I just jumped to Seeing AI. I think maybe because it's been there for so long, and I think the action button does help, because I've gone a bit geeky, really, and I've ended up building myself a shortcut for the action button, where I've got a few different options when I run it. And that is more difficult to do than you'd think. But I've got one working just for me. And of course, live recognition isn't an option in there. So I think that pushes me towards Seeing AI as well. But being able to query it and ask questions as well, I'd definitely be using that more, I think.
Did it not also say that as well for photos? Because Apple's been obviously introducing more and more AI to image recognition. Don't know if anybody's sort of gone into the photo album and had the great description of like two faces. But I think you can now question it there as well.
I believe so. There'll be more detailed image descriptions as well as the other few features. So the more generated image descriptions will be available. Also generated subtitles was one thing. But for me, another thing that maybe is a bit niche, because I don't think many people use this, voice control. So voiceover, Apple had voice control for quite a few years now, where you can, you know, start voice control, and if you've got voiceover on, you can say swipe left, swipe right, double tap, single tap, you know, things like that. And in effectively control your phone to some extent, at least, with your voice. But it was always a bit clunky, because you had to be very careful what commands you use, how specific they are, and if they're not specific enough, they're not good enough. What Apple will introduce is the ability to use more natural voice commands to kind of to voice control your iPhone. Exactly how this will work obviously will depend as to what happens when this actually comes out. But you can actually refer to items on the screen a bit more rather than kind of, you know, asking it to do specific gestures. So I'm curious as to how it will work in practice, because on paper, it sounds really good, and it sounds like it could be a lot more useful than any of the voice control we currently have on Apple devices with the voice control feature. But again, I would like to see if in practice sounds as good as it does on paper.
Yeah, I noticed that as well. I think the example they gave, or the example that I saw anyway, was instead of having to say click, I don't know, navigation folder, you can say click the purple folder if you can't remember what it's called, or if you're on a platform where the name isn't obvious. So it might be, I don't know, like select the question mark icon, because you're hoping that's going to give you the help instructions. But maybe somebody behind the scenes hasn't given it a proper name. So yeah, I picked up on that as well. I thought that looks really promising. We'll see if it works. But it sounds good.
That's the concern. It sounds promising, is just whether it will be. I mean, voice control, I don't use it for the same reasons, you know, people who actually have to use it have this for. But I do like it on occasion when I would like more hands-free because I'm doing something else, but I want to do something on my phone. So it's not obviously the full intended purpose to, you know, fund my lazy habits, but it is just useful to be able to actually utilize it in a more natural way rather than kind of having to always make sure you think of the right command and you say the right command. I just find we live in times where natural voice commands should be more of a thing rather than kind of having to have a list of commands written down so that you can refer to every time you need to use it.
Yeah, I think another thing that it used to do was like bring up, or it might still do this, was bring up like a grid, and you could say like tap number 4 for like the 4th icon on that grid. Whereas now you can just, as you said, you could just say like click the play button or click the help button and it will figure out what you mean. Because of course, if you got that number wrong, or if you think, like while you're swiping through for voiceover, if you think it's the 4th element in there, but it's actually not 4th on the grid for whatever reason, because of how it's written behind the scenes, then yeah, it will help you out with that. There's a lot of people hinting about, because the live recognition and things are the big one for me. There's a lot of people wondering if this is hinting about glasses or something like this coming to the Vision Pro. And it's an interesting point. I think the big thing with this for me is that, first off, there's going to be more of those detailed descriptions built in, meaning that you don't have to fire images off to things like Seeing AI or Be My Eyes to get descriptions. But also, this will be done, we were talking earlier about privacy, these descriptions will all be done on device as well, which is an important point. They'll all be done locally.
Yeah, I think that's Apple's sort of biggest sell. Well, I think the two things, as I understand it, that Apple focuses on are accessibility and privacy. I think that's why in some cases, like, you know, subtitling or image descriptions, you can say they've been a bit slower to the table, but there's a reason for that. You know, they've spent longer working out how to do it, as you've just said, Callum, on device. So you're not sending anything to the cloud, you're not having to worry about the whole issue of privacy or what happens if that company has a data leak or anything like that.
I think that's what I've always said with a lot of Apple features, is that they may not be as fast as the competitors, granted, but I find that when they do eventually release these features, however late it is, they do tend to work really well, whereas sometimes some companies do release features a lot faster, and that's fine, that's not a problem, that's how they approach it. But you do find they have a lot more issues, but the advantage is we do get them faster, just sometimes may have to put up with a lot more issues. Whereas with Apple, yes, you do have to wait longer, but they seem to be more fine-tuned and more perfected.
I'd agree with that.
I mean, I'm going to put it out there, and this is purely a guess, we won't see these features for a bit yet, but I imagine you'll still get better, even more detailed descriptions from the cloud services, just because they've got a lot more power in there to do these sorts of things. But if you get anything beyond, like, as you said, you know, two people smiling or something, then that's still an improvement. I'll still take that.
Yeah, or the interrogation thing. So I've had it before where my family sometimes, and I'm going to name and shame it, my mum sometimes forgets that I can't see and will send a photo of a booking she's made. You know, the argument being that then everybody has the details and we can't all ask her questions individually.
Yeah.
Which is a great theory. The trouble is I can't see it and my brothers don't read it. But anyway, if I can, and you know, have Apple read it, and at the moment sometimes it can, sometimes I'm quite impressed by it actually, it will pick up on all the key details. But because it's a screenshot, there'll be a lot of junk in there I don't want or don't need to hear. So if I can now establish that it can read it, great, but then say, okay, good, you've got this, now just tell me what time we booked this for, or you know, what's the date on the booking, and sort of cut to the chase, basically. I think that could be really helpful.
Yeah. There are other features in there as well. I think the image recognition is the big one for us, for visually impaired people. There are a couple of other things as well. Better handoff between devices if you're using hearing aids, apparently. So if you're using made for iPhone hearing aids, they will hand off better between your phone and your Mac. So I'm guessing similar to the way that AirPods do, where when audio starts playing on one device, it will, your hearing aids will kind of switch over. How well that's going to work with VoiceOver, if you're using both, remains to be seen, of course, because the AirPods, that experience on the AirPods can be a little bit all over the place, but we'll see how that goes. Something else that I thought was interesting, and this is more than likely of no interest to us, but I just thought it was such a cool feature.
I think I know what you're going to say, Callum.
Yeah. Using the Vision Pro, and this is only in the US, but if you use the Vision Pro with certain electric wheelchairs, you're going to be able to use iGaze to control your wheelchair. So for example, if you sort of, in the direction you want to go, so if you look to the left, for example, that will steer your wheelchair left. If you look to the right, it will steer it right. To go forwards, you look upwards, apparently, which is a big disappointment. I was hoping if you looked upwards, you would take off, but apparently that's not how it works. But now, like I said, but probably not of interest to us. In fact, it's probably the opposite of what we want because it's relying on your eyes. But how cool is that? Just as a feature.
I have to say, Callum, that jumped out at me. I thought that is phenomenal. I mean, it's probably one of the ones that sounds cool to begin with and that there'll be some teething issues, but just, yeah, how much of a difference is that potentially going to make to lots of people? I thought it was very, very cool.
Yeah, very interesting. Yeah, a lot of interesting stuff come out of this one this year, which I'm looking forward to trying. A couple of important points. So these will come in iOS 27, which is usually released around about September. It'll be a few months before you see these features. And also the image recognition that we've just spent ages talking about, this will only be on devices that support Apple Intelligence. So that is the iPhone 15 Pro upwards, I believe. So if you're using a device that's below the 15 Pro, then I don't really know what happens. I think you're stuck with the basic image descriptions, but I could be wrong. Of course, we'll see when iOS 27 comes out. But if you've been tempted to upgrade your device to one of these Apple Intelligence compatible models, now might be the time to do it, because there's quite a few cool things coming from that. Has anything caught your eye with the Apple announcements? What did you think to it? Is there anything you're looking forward to? Or are we getting too excited? Let us know what you think. techtalk@rnib.org.uk.
We are talking all things Braille, as we are talking to all things Dotty. Joining me from all things Dotty is Brandon Holcooper. Brandon, thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me on. It's going to be good.
Can you tell me, what was the catalyst for starting all things Dotty, and a little bit about you?
My name is Brandon Holcoop. I'm 24 years old. I live in Plymouth with my mum, dad, brother and sister, and my dog, Bentley. I'm completely blind. I have light perception only. My condition is called septo-optic dysplasia, which means the nerves that should connect my eyes to my brain aren't long enough. I started All Things Dotty 3 years ago because I realised that not enough was being done to make the world more accessible in a public sense. So, for example, I used to go to restaurants with my family, and we always used to say, do you have a Braille menu? The answer was always no. Then I realized the other part of it was the fact that nobody could read their own birthday cards. I couldn't read my own birthday cards. A family would buy them for me, and then they would have to read them out to me. But then I couldn't read them myself after that. I couldn't enjoy them, the same as a sighted person would. And that's how we started, really. That's why I started. I realized that there were things that needed to be provided and that awareness needed to be raised, and I decided to try and start the fight.
Next, I want to talk to you about your QR codes and how you make restaurant menus accessible, because that's quite a game changer, especially that, you know, at the moment, sometimes you've got few options. You can maybe get a Braille menu at the restaurant, which may or may not be in date. Sometimes you might just have to ask a staff member to read it. How have you made restaurant menus accessible?
We do offer Braille menus. And we contact restaurants and we offer them a package whereby they update the menu. They send the menu through to us. We update it for them for a reduced price after the initial menu is done. On the flip side of that, obviously, there is a large print. So on the front of the menu is Braille. And on the back, you flip it over, it's stuck double fronted, and there's large prints, and that's catering for everybody. Even if somebody forgets their glasses, you know, so this person forgets their glasses, they can use that. Alternatively, the QR code options. Now, this was a bit of a brainwave I had last year. You can scan the QR code and have the menu read out to you. So we transcribe the menu, and the way we do that is by transcribing it and then placing that under a secure server, creating a QR code for it, printing the QR code, and then putting Braille over the QR code to make it accessible. So from what I understand, a QR code is made up of squares, and in those squares are loads of little dots. So we Braille loads of little meaningless dots over the surface of the QR code so that a visually impaired person knows where to scan. And then once they've scanned that, it reads the menu out, or the, you know, whatever it might be, it reads it out to them in full.
When it comes to restaurants getting involved with your accessible menus, you know, how many restaurants have you got taking you up on this offer?
Quite a few. I mean, I reckon we've got at least 50. Most of them are independent restaurants, although we have done a couple for a restaurant in a Holiday Inn in Liverpool in the past. That's the only chain we've worked with. But we've got quite a few in my hometown of Plymouth, quite a few in the southwest. We've got three or four in Wales, one in Scotland, and I think we've got three in the southeast as well, three or four in the southeast.
Is there a way that people can either recommend restaurants or get restaurants to join kind of your accessible menus scheme?
If you go onto our website, there is a Braille menus page. Their website is allthings.ebraille.co.uk. Click on the Braille menus page. And I would urge anybody who's listening, if you know of a restaurant that should be accessible but isn't, get the website up on your phone. Show them the website. If you would like some business cards or some flyers, please do email in through the website, because we can send you business cards and you can hand them out to restaurants as well, you know, and they can get in touch with us.
I want to now talk about some of the work you have done with museums. What were the biggest challenges in kind of taking the, you know, audio menu concept from kind of the restaurant table to exhibitions and describing museum exhibits?
You're basically, as you just said, they're two very different documents. The menu is a table, and it has descriptions of the ingredients included in a dish. You know, you've got a full English breakfast that might have sausages, bacon, beans, that sort of thing. What you're doing then is you're putting the idea, you've still got to transcribe it, you've still got to edit it, you've still got to change the layout and the format of the document to make it flow. Because what we do is we use an app called Natural Reader to read the tour guides and indeed the menus. So we've got to make sure that that app, that AI app, can understand what it's meant to do. So in concept, you're using a much bigger document. It's going to be a lot longer in audio. And what we had to do is we had to make sure that nothing was missing. So we went from room to room. We went through the whole layout of the museum. We looked at what exhibits were in each room, how we would describe them. The manager of the museum actually wrote the initial tour guide, and then I edited it to make sure it's that little bit more descriptive and explanatory for visually impaired people. And then, of course, it still works the same way, in that we put it on a secure database and we create a QR code to it. But the actual transcription process had to be looked at really carefully, because as you can imagine, a tour guide is so much longer than a menu, and with so much extra information, we didn't want any of it to go missing, and we didn't want anything to go wrong with the AI recording process.
I next want to talk to you about the lived experience you use when designing your solutions, because, you know, you input your lived experience to everything you do. And the question I've got is, in terms of businesses, do you think they grasp these solutions better than they would if, say, they got in external consultants? Do you think, you know, how much of a difference do you think having that lived experience makes in terms of putting in an appropriate solution to your product?
Somebody living with sight loss has more of an understanding of what the visually impaired community would benefit from and what the community actually 100% needs. When I provide an accessibility audit to an organization, whether that's the museum, a charity, a restaurant, whatever it might be, I'm putting my real lived experience into the conversation. I'm saying, well, based on my experiences, I'd recommend this. Or because I know a lot of visually impaired people and I follow a lot of groups on Facebook, I can say, well, the general consensus with this topic is that X, Y, and Z. Bringing lived experience into it seems to make organizations more aware that actually, yes, it does need to be put in place. What I would say, though, is that there are still some organizations that are not receptive to it at all. One restaurant in particular, they actually walked away before I finished introducing myself. I'd explained that my name was Brandon and that we offer accessible menus. And they said, no, we don't need it. We don't have any visually impaired customers. And I said, well, how do you know if you've got any visually impaired customers? Not everybody walks around with a cane or a guide dog. So how do you know? I think there is still a long way to come. Despite the fact that lived experience helps, I think there's a very, very long way to come in awareness. The Equality Act exists and organizations should be following it. But unfortunately, if they don't think that they have any visually impaired customers, or if they think that their VI customers would be happy to have the menu read out to them, they're actually really mistaken.
The final question I want to ask you, you know, you guys at AllThings.e have conquered accessible menus, you've conquered museums and audio tours. So my next question is, what barrier is next for AllThings.e to break down for the blind and partially sighted community?
Well, the biggest thing for us at the moment is the fact that timetables aren't accessible to us. If you come across a timetable on a website, it may still be in table form, which means that VoiceOver or your screen reader might struggle to interpret it for you. So the next biggest thing is that AllThings.e is working with Plymouth City Council to provide audio timetables, which again will be situated under a QR code. And it will allow visually impaired people and people with reading difficulties to scan the QR code and have the timetable read out to them. And it means that it's just so much easier to access the timetable that you are looking for rather than struggling with a website, struggling with a table, struggling with something that actually might not be completely accessible. But also we're looking at going back to museums, we're looking at providing tactile portraits of some of their exhibits. So with the museum that I just worked with, Tavistock Museum it's called, to provide them with audio tour guides, I also produced tactile portraits of an Edward VI coin, a replica of the Golden Hind, and we've got a couple of others in the pipeline as well. So that's just a couple of our bigger ambitions at the moment.
That is excellent, Brandon. Thank you very much, first of all, for all the great work you do at AllThings.e for blind and partially sighted people, but also for coming on and telling us all about it here on RNIB Connect Radio.
And that's it from us this week. Thank you so much, as always, for listening. And if you've got any tips that you want to send in or anything we can help you out with, or just any feedback, are you enjoying what you're hearing? Let us know. techtalk@rnib.org.uk is our email address. More than welcome to send a written email or attach a voice note. We'll be back with you same time next week. But from me, Callum Stoneman, Hewitt Pavalkovich, and Natalie Curran, bye for now.
Goodbye.
Bye.
See you next week.